Hello, I'm Lori Watanabe, the editor of Mobility Management Magazine. Welcome to our Mobility Management Podcast. Today I'm joined by Pooja Vishwanathan from Braze Mobility to discuss the future of the seating and wheeled mobility industry. Pooja Vishwanathan, PhD, is the CEO and founder of Braze Mobility. She completed doctoral and postdoctoral research in robotics and assistive technologies and has been working with smart wheelchair technology for more than a decade. Pooja has incorporated her personal experience and years of clinical evidence into the world's first blind spot sensors for wheelchairs, and she has received several awards and scholarships from prestigious organizations in Canada and the U.S., including Google. Pooja, thanks so much for being with us. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks so much, Lori. I'm really, really excited to be here today, and I know we've been wanting to talk for quite a while on your podcast. I'm glad we could make this happen.
We have been planning this for a while because we met a few years ago during one of the trade show seasons, and Braze Mobility is still a young company, having been founded in 2016. But the specific idea for us to sit down together for a podcast came from a Zoom meeting earlier this year when we started talking more specifically about the rather incredible path you've taken to get to the complex rehab technology industry. For example, you were in the academic world, but to bring this blind spot sensor technology to commercial production and availability, you transitioned into the business world, which is a new one for you. You are a woman who's a CEO, and you're a very young CEO. You're a woman of color, and you're from Canada. So there are a number of traits that set you and your company apart from many other CRT manufacturers and CEOs. And that's why I'm so excited to talk to you today. Not just because you forged quite a different path, kind of an atypical path, but also because I know you would love others to be able to benefit from what you and your team have learned along the way. So there are different ways to come into the CRT industry, obviously. And while we often talk about the future of CRT from a technology perspective, we don't always talk as much about the people who will be creating this next generation of products to engineer and to produce them. So I wanted to start there. I know you started in the academic world, and your PhD is in robotics and assistive technology, but eventually you moved from the academic world into the business world. So can you start off by telling us why you decided to take that leap?
Yeah, so first of all, you know, unlike I think a lot of people who do their PhD, my goal was never really to become an academic or a researcher. I was really just passionate about a specific problem that I was trying to solve. And that problem for me really began when I saw what the situation was in long-term care facilities. And when I went in for the first time and noticed that a lot of the residents there were slumped over in manual wheelchairs, that they didn't have the strength to self-propel. And they weren't being allowed to use power wheelchairs because of safety concerns. You know, the majority of residents in long-term care facilities often have dementia. And so that diagnosis alone was often excluding people from power mobility use. And so this was something that I saw. And, you know, it really did feel like a violation of a fundamental human right. But of course, there were a lot of factors to consider and balance. So it seemed like a very interesting problem that needed to be solved. And that really was, you know, my goal all along. At the time, industry wasn't really solving that problem. I managed to find some research groups that were really interested in this and were actively working in the area. So I just really followed the problem. And, you know, eventually after I finished my postdoctoral work, actually my PhD work, and then started on my postdoctoral work, it just became very frustrating because as I was starting to build these systems, I was receiving a lot of positive responses. In fact, I still remember I had done some TV and radio interviews, and I was getting voicemails and emails from individuals who were asking me if, you know, the technology that I had demonstrated could be available for their loved ones, and, you know, that they were being denied or they were having devices taken away from them. And it was just really frustrating for me to have to say, well, this is just a research prototype. I don't know when it's going to be commercially available. And that got so devastating that I actually decided, believe it or not, that I wouldn't do another interview until I figured out how to get this to market. So that was the beginning of when I started making the transition into the business world.
Well, that's really interesting because CRT, a lot of it has an entrepreneurial history, and it turns out so do you. You have an entrepreneurial history as well. It's just kind of coming from a slightly different direction in that it started in the academic world. But I know a lot of seating and mobility products start off as ideas that are designed and literally have been built in people's garages, largely because a family member or friend needed mobility support that wasn't otherwise available, which is much the story that you just told. And we still see some of that model today where a team designs a product to meet a need that they feel isn't being met. But going forward, do you think the academic world could be the starting point for more seating and mobility products? And if so, why do you think we could be seeing more of that model going forward?
So, you know, I think it can be. I think the academic realm can be a starting point, but it also doesn't necessarily need to be. I think what the most important thing is that research and industry collaborate in the best possible way in order to leverage the strengths of academia and industry appropriately. So while that might mean that, you know, maybe some of the ideation happens, you know, in research and then sort of gets passed along, or whether a product gets developed and then it gets clinically validated in the research world, I think there's many different areas and sort of phases of the process of product development where academia can play a role. And I think it's just really about finding the best way to collaborate. And that could be a combination of, you know, sort of the research team strength, the development team strength. So, you know, as an example, I think we at Braze have collaborated with academia in many different ways. And currently, a lot of our collaborations are more on the validation side, since we already have a product developed. But for some of the products in our pipeline, you know, we're always, again, looking for ways to engage with researchers at the more ideation phase. So I think it's an ongoing process, and it's really all about continuous dialogue and engagement.
You said that because you came from the academic side, you faced a learning curve regarding how to operate a business. So, for example, you had to learn about marketing your product and how to do that. What were some of the greatest challenges for you and your team as you were getting up to speed? And then on the flip side, what benefits do you think the academic model can offer to CRT?
So I can speak personally about, I think, what my academic brought and sort of, I guess, how it transformed me as a developer and as an inventor. I think one of the things that I actually learned in the academic environment, especially during my postdoctoral education, was on being reflexive. And ironically, this is not something that I learned in my computer science training, but it was actually part of some of the more advanced social sciences training that I took later on, because I really felt like that was a gap for me and learning how to engage with my users and really learning how to actively listen and empathize was something that I had been lacking in my academic background, and the social sciences training really helped there. But, you know, in terms of being reflexive, you know, what I'm really talking about is becoming aware of your own cognitive biases, right? So that's something that I think is really important, and it's great training. I think, you know, a big part of the scientific model, of course, is testing hypotheses, which is also something that's very common to the lean startup methodology. You know, you're constantly testing hypotheses. So I think the scientific model that's such a core part of the academic training is something that needs to be, you know, absolutely brought into product development. And then what I touched on earlier, I think clinical validation is such an important piece that I think the academic world has huge value to offer there in terms of, you know, outcome measures and really looking at what is clinically meaningful and not, you know, going beyond the numbers, right? Like what's really going to make an impact in someone's life.
When we first started talking about this topic, you said that when you arrived in the CRT industry, you noticed that the manufacturer and supplier segments especially were pretty largely male-dominated. And we see more diversity among clinicians, the occupational and physical therapists, but among manufacturers and suppliers and repair service technicians, those are positions that are still mostly held by men. So coming from the academic world, was that a surprise to you?
You know what? Yes and no. I've been part of academic classrooms that were also very male dominated. I mean, being a woman in tech, you can imagine. I was actually part of a very small, relatively small bioinformatics program in my undergrad. And so this was a specialization within computer science that really looked at using computer science skills and sort of that sort of technology to explore you know, and really come up with new sort of discoveries in the area of genetics. And so this was something that was of huge appeal and was quite attractive actually to a lot of women who were interested in the life sciences. And we commonly do see that theme where women are often attracted to technology that can have huge human impact. And so my bioinformatics classroom, which was about maybe 40 to 50 of us, was actually quite balanced in that we had, you know, about 50% men and women. Of course, when we were part of the bigger classrooms, like our math classes and our computer science classes, it was a lot more male-dominated. And then I went into a PhD program where I was the only woman in my robotics lab for a long time. So, you know, so it's something that I'm certainly familiar with, I think, here in North America. You know, I'm glad that it's slowly changing, but we've certainly seen a trend of women not being represented in tech. So, you know, yeah, it wasn't as much of a surprise, but I think the more important thing here is why is it that way and what do we need to do to change that?
Well, that's one of the topics that led us to this idea of podcasting in the first place, because we had talked about the benefits of having a diverse team, but full disclosure here, when this first came up, I said something like, oh, yes, of course, it can be so beneficial to hire a team with all kinds of diversity, including people of various genders, ethnicities, disabilities, cultures, etc. And you answered me and you said, sure, that's a great starting point, but you believe in the importance of diverse leadership, not just diversity in hiring for entry-level positions, for example. So can you explain what that kind of diversity means to you and why you think diverse leadership is so crucial?
Yes, I remember that conversation. And you know, I absolutely do believe diversity needs to start at leadership. And that's because leadership really sets the tone, you know, it sets the culture, they set agendas and priorities, you know, and as someone who is a sort of an underrepresented individual myself as a leader, I've really seen that myself serving in this role of leadership, I've been a sort of a bit of a magnet, you know, for other underrepresented individuals. And so at Braze, you know, we've hired several interns over the years, and we've always attracted the best or top talent when it comes to other women undergrads in engineering who've wanted to come work with us. And I think a huge part of that is because, you know, they see a woman leader. We've attracted all sorts of diversity. And it's so interesting because even as a postdoc, I had sort of the privilege of being able to co-supervise a master's in OT program. And, you know, here it's sort of the flip side, right? So in occupational therapy, of course, we see a much more female-dominated sector there. And what was really interesting is when I put up a project for this master's in OT program, there were only 4 men in that OT class, and we ended up getting 2 of those 4 on our project. And it was so fascinating because as I was speaking to these young men, and you know, they did great work, they were really driven and passionate, and I started talking to them about their experiences as being, you know, 2 of the 4 men in the classroom, it was really eye-opening because some of the things that they said were actually very similar to what I hear from underrepresented women in tech. You know, very similar issues around sort of confidence in terms of how they were being perceived, you know, feeling dismissed sometimes in conversations, feeling like, you know, others didn't think they belonged or didn't think that they would last. And I think that's, you know, that's really powerful because what it says is that whenever you have an organization or a room full of, you know, one sex or one race or one color, behaviors start emerging that can be very discriminatory. And so I think leadership keeps everyone in check. And when you have diversity at the leadership level, it trickles down the entire organization. Now, of course, it's so much more difficult to establish diversity in leadership because, you know, it's a lot easier, you know, when you're sort of lower down in the pyramid, there's a lot more openings, there's a lot more positions you can create. I think the biggest challenge is that if you do want to establish diversity in leadership, often it means that someone needs to step down. And, you know, I think that is a really, really difficult choice for those decision makers and those people in those leadership positions to be able to make. And so I think that's that's something that we're really going to need to have a lot of conversations around in terms of how do we introduce diversity in leadership, especially when that leadership is so well established and, you know, it's been around for many, many years. Who's going to step down?
For my last question, I'd like to circle back to something that I said at the start, which is where CRT is at this point in its lifetime, at this point in its history. Mobility management started almost 20 years ago now, and at that time, this was still a very young, very entrepreneurial industry. But now, CRT is at the point where payers and referral sources expect outcome measures. They expect to see data. They expect proof that CRT works. And I think there are also expectations that in that same way, CRT will police itself and is now old enough and established enough to be able to educate its professionals and create standards and hold itself to those standards. So given where CRT is now in its history, what about the future of CRT excites you, and what possibilities do you and your team most look forward to going forward?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's a lot really to look forward to. I mean, there's so much more for us to do. You know, and I like to think about it, I think there's going to be three areas that we're really excited about, and we at least at Praise would love to make, you know, an impact and a difference in. So, of course, the first being diversity. I think just, you know, having more diverse leadership, having people represented, having more people with disabilities in those positions of leadership, and really being able to drive narratives. I mean, as an example, we've actually been sort of holding off and just waiting to fill a critical position in our company where we're looking for a head of marketing position. And we're really adamant that we want someone with lived experience with disability to fill this role. And, you know, what it's meant is that it's taking us longer to fill the position because, of course, we have to reach out to a much larger network than that we otherwise would need to. But it is something that's really important to us. Another thing that I think my own personal experience, I can help bridge the gap is everything that we were saying about the academic world and how there really does need to be more synergy between academia and CRT. And so that's another area where I hope that my own research experience and my vast network of researchers and colleagues we still continue to collaborate with. In fact, I've been working on several publications looking at how to expedite and really accelerate product development in CRT through new ways of clinical validation, new models. And so that's work that I'm really excited to bring in. Hopefully you'll all get to see some of that work soon. So I think, you know, that bridge between academia and industry needs to be filled, and all the things that you're talking about regarding standards and outcome measures, I think that will all come out as a result of these stronger synergies and connections. And I think the third area that we'd also like, and we have been actually working on quite a bit, is also really expanding CRT so that it's not as much of a bubble as it is right now, and really bringing CRT out to be more mainstream. We've done that at Praise by representing and, you know, pitching in all sorts of venues that are, I think, fairly foreign to CRT. I mean, we've been part of accelerators that are very well known in the tech space, but not so much in the CRT space. And so, you know, we've been part of Techstars, which is a very, very well-known international accelerator. We won a challenge recently at the AARP Innovation. And so, you know, these huge names outside of CRT, where, you know, we really don't see much representation from the industry, and we're often the only mobility company pitching at a lot of these events. And so we're always very proud when we win these events because we feel that we've sort of, you know, brought that education around disability and accessibility and made it more mainstream. So I think that's another huge area for CRT to work on is to really bring a lot of these challenges and pain points and problems that the industry is solving and make that knowledge more mainstream so that we can all work together and we can partner with different organizations outside of CRT. That's when we're really going to make a difference.
Well, thanks so much, Pooja. I really, really have enjoyed talking to you because just from listening to you talk, I've realized how much you've raised and changed my expectations. As I said, I first was thinking, oh, diverse hires, hire some interns, hire some entry-level people. And you're the one who said, why do we stop there? why is that good enough for us? And it was a really humbling experience for me because I have been in this industry for almost 20 years, and you and I, age-wise, are a generation apart. So it's been really interesting to hear you talk about your expectations and what you look forward to. It's given me an opportunity to look at my expectations and what I look forward to, what I would like to see. And it's really kind of raised the bar for what I would like to see. So I really, really appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, my pleasure, Lori. I think these discussions are so important. I think it makes us all grow and evolve in different ways and really understand, you know, what I think we all need to work on personally and how we can help each other in, you know, I think just creating a much more inclusive and diverse industry in CRT.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. Thanks so much for being here. Mobility Management Podcasts are available for listening and downloading on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The best way to make sure you don't miss any of our podcasts is to subscribe. You can go onto our website, mobilitymgmt.com, to listen there. I would like to thank my guest today, Pooja Viswanathan, the CEO of Braze Mobility, for her time and her ideas and her enthusiasm. And thank you very much for listening to our conversation. We'll be back again soon.